You are now listening to the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. As always, I am your host, Daniel Lee, or Photos by DLEE. So for this week, we're going to be discussing features and techniques that are no longer useful with mirrorless cameras. I do think this will be a bit of a shorter episode, mainly due to the fact I got a bit of a cold at the moment, so kind of hard to talk for long without sneezing, and even while I'm recording this, I have to keep pausing it, so. But otherwise, we'll get right into it. As always, we'll start off with some personal updates. So the good news is I finally finished the Canon EOS R6 review. Now the written version of it, completely ready, I could post it right now if I wanted to. But I want to do the audio version as well, so I just need to find time to record that. Potentially that may be tomorrow morning, which would be Tuesday morning. I'll be recording that. If that is the case, I may release it on Thursday or Friday of this week. I have been trying to change some things on my website. So if you know anything about WordPress, I use Jetpack. I've also been having a lot of server related issues and performance issues. And I hear that, you know, Jetpack is often the cause of this. So I decided to give it a try on one of my websites because, you know, I got a few on Mr. Meowpus. Since removing Jetpack from there, I actually found the performance is better and I don't have the same issues I was having. So I plan to remove all three of these websites, remove Jetpack from them. So once I can get that done, then I can release the post, because if you can't access the website, then there's no point in really releasing it. Over the weekend, I actually started my M50 Mark II review. That one is actually about 75% done already. I managed to sit down and concentrate. It's going to be a lot shorter compared to the R6 review as well. So that may be why as well, but I just want to do something simple for that one because it's not like as complex of a camera in a way as the R6, so it doesn't require such a deep, in-depth review in my opinion. But I'll record the audio for that one too, finish that one once I finish writing that one. That'll probably come a week or two after, then hopefully by then I can do the Tamron review, then I can look at doing the RF35, RF85, and RF50mm review. Plus I have some news, I failed my challenge to myself, I did let the gas get the better of me. There's a lens I have wanted for a very, very long time, which was the Sigma 56mm f1.4 DC lens, I believe it is, for, you know, APS-C mirrorless. It's quite a nice lens, and, you know, I've always been so conflicted about the EFM series and whether I should invest in it or not. But, you know, recently, just after using the M50 Mark II, I'm so much more sold on it. I've been taking it sort of everywhere with me because I got that backpack I discussed weeks ago. It fits in there, and I can take the M50 plus either the 22 or the 32 and the 56, and it's still lighter than my R6 and the 35, so I've been carrying it around a lot with me. I've been carrying either that or the RF and the 50mm because the 50 is so light. It's practically a pancake lens on the R6, so I've been carrying that combo as well. And yeah, it's just super easy, so I decided to finally invest a bit more in the RF, the EFM mount, so I bought it. Did I fail? Yes, I did, but hopefully I don't fail again. I do not want to buy any more lenses. I'll say knowing my luck, Canon will now renounce a EFM 15mm f2, which would, you know, be like a 24mm. Either that or 11mm, which would be like a 18, which would be perfect if they had that, or I would use the M50 for travel then. That's it for personal updates, so we'll hop over to the news. So I got quite a few news stories, but what I'll do is I'll just try and go through them really quickly because they're nothing like, you know, they require huge discussion. The first lens to be announced is for Sony APS-C, which is a Samyang AF 12mm f2 ultra-wide lens. Now this lens is based off their old manual focus design with new coatings and that sort of stuff to bring it into the modern age. In terms of design, it's a very minimal, sleek design, which I really, really like. It's just pretty much a barrel with this massive focus ring, which looks really nice, to be honest. If they had this for Canon APS-C, I'd be very tempted. We come around to around 19mm. So it's only 2.3 inches long and weighs 7.51 ounces. How much that is in grams, I'm assuming it's like 100, 200 grams just by the look of this lens. And it's going to be retailing for about $500. On Sony cameras, it's 18mm, but on Canon, because they have a 1.6 time crop. It doesn't come out on Canon, but, you know, I just like to give that comparison. This is sort of like a very astro focus lens, which, you know, being f2 and super wide, most people use it. 12 elements in 10 groups. Do I think it's worth buying if you have a Sony APS-C and you do Astro? Yeah, I definitely reckon it's worth a try. Maybe wait till there's a few more reviews, see what the image quality is actually like, but it does look quite promising, to be honest. The next story is Twitter rolls out 4K image support on iOS and Android. Now, surprisingly, I didn't even realize this. Twitter has much lower resolution images on their mobile apps. Apparently, images are currently compressed at most to 2048 by 2048. So now they're going to increase it to 3048 pixels on the long end. So when you're using your phone, as long as you set it to actually allow higher quality images, you'll be able to see higher quality images. If they do the full size images in their feed, so rather than cropping them, plus this, I feel like it's a big step up and hopefully it puts pressure on other people. You know, like I obviously won't use Instagram still, but hopefully it puts pressure on those people to increase the image quality of their stuff rather than just always going with these super low res images and that look like horrible garbage sometimes because of how compressed they do. If you don't already know, I post everything on Twitter. I love Twitter now. I wish I got into it a lot earlier, but hopefully they continue to do all these more photo-related and, you know, media-related updates. So we'll see what has to happen. Next up, Nikon has released firmware for the entire Z series mirrorless lineup, which is obviously excellent to see. The update doesn't really bring any major changes, but it does improve the usability and the reliability on already existing features of these cameras. So for example, with the Z6 and the Z7 Mark II, it'll bring an increased overall AF performance to deliver more stable shooting, which includes faster focusing and shooting with AF in low light situations and when using subject tracking AF. Also adds AF's usability when using external speed light. The Z5 gets similar AF detection speed improvement in low light. If you look at the link there, we'll have a list of what all the upgrades are, but it's always good to see that they're constantly working on these bodies and improving them. Canon are a bit slow with the firmware updates, and when they do add them, they're usually video related. So I would like to see more stills orientated stuff, but I guess at the same time, Canon's, you know, autofocus, I don't know how much better it can already get compared to how it is. So that does make a difference, you know. Sony have also announced their latest ultra wide angle prime, which is a 14mm f1.8 G Master, which is a very small lens for what it offers. So measures only 3.9 inches and long and 3.3 inches in maximum diameter. Yes, you can hear me laughing and resisting making jokes. It only weighs 460 grams, which, you know, for a lens like this is actually very, very impressive. It does have a bulbous front element, so obviously your traditional screw-on filters would not work. You'll need to get one of those more custom systems that fits over the hood, or I believe it actually supports rear mount filters, and you can even comes with something you can cut them out. It does look like a very nice lens. This was originally rumored though as a 16mm GM, which to me personally, I would have much preferred. I feel like 14 is so common, you know, I guess maybe it's a common for a reason, but if you look at 16-35, they're a very common zoom, so why not do a 16mm prime? For me, that's all I would need for my cityscapes, 16mm when I travel. Probably one of my most used lenses, in fact, when I travel. So in terms of pricing, this lens is coming out in at just under $1,600. I'm not sure what the AUD pricing is. I'm not sure if it's been released yet, but it's bound to be, I think it's just around over $2,000 from what I remember reading on a forum, if that was correct. If you're looking for something for your Astro and you want something higher quality than the Rokinon 14mm f2.8, this is obviously a really, really good option. At the same time, it is apparently $1,000 US more expensive than some other lenses you could get, say like the Sony 12-24 kind of thing. So it's sort of up to you what you really want to spend and how much you're actually going to get the use of it. The final news story is Tamron announces the APS-C 11-20mm f2.8 and as well as the full frame 150-500mm f5.6-6.7. Now obviously these are for Sony only, but to me the actual APS-C lens seems a bit more interesting. It looks quite nice, small, image quality seems to be really good. 11-20mm is a good range as well, and the fact that it has a constant aperture is really, really good. You don't want it to sort of be variable and change as you get on the longer end. You shoot at a slower amount, you get 2.8 no matter what for out of it. And it's only 335 grams. If this was to come out on Canon EFM mount, I would probably be pre-ordering it already, although it is $829 US dollars. So it's not the cheapest of lenses, but It is a very high quality lens for what it offers, so it is kind of, you know, balances out in that sense. But at the same time, the Canon EFM 11-22 was actually a very good lens. You get that extra 2mm, but it's a lot slower. It's like f4.5 to f6.3 or something like that. Kind of regret selling it, but you know, it's cheap. I can buy it again if I need to later down the track. I would prefer a prime at the same time though. For the 150 to 500, this is obviously your wildlife lens. If you see the preview videos, you know, shooting cheetahs, that kind of stuff, really aimed at the nature photographers, because obviously you're not going to be doing portraits with this thing. It weighs apparently 1.72 kilos without the tripod mount, which itself weighs 156 grams. And apparently it has a MSRP of $1,399 USD. So not too bad pricing for what it offers, obviously. If you shoot wildlife, this is obviously a good lens for you. Maybe you prefer it over 100 to 400. That extra range up to 500 millimeters is pretty good. I don't know what the USD pricing of the Sony 200 to 600 is, but that would, you know, I would kind of be inclined to go for the 200 to 600. I use that lens and it's heavy as hell, but it is a good lens for sure. That's what my first ever good bird photo of a noisy miner was taken with that one. So, you know, maybe I got a soft spot for that, but who knows. So we are done with the news and onto the main topic. So we're going to talk today about features and techniques that are no longer useful with mirrorless cameras. So obviously with mirrorless cameras, you know, some technology and some things did change. So for example, there's no mirror, obviously. The lens is communicating with the sensor, so that changes things. And there's just general features that a lot of people like to use and rely on that you don't even need with a mirrorless camera anymore. So I thought I'd just talk over it so people can understand a bit more about mirrorless cameras, because, you know, I've spoke to people, who have thought that the only advantage of a mirrorless camera is that it's smaller and lighter, which is not true. It's pretty much often the same size as a DSLR when it comes to full frame bodies, because, you know, ergonomics. At the moment, there's four main features that I can think of that you would really sort of benefit of. So the first one of that is AFMA, or autofocus micro adjust. This is what it was called in Canon. I don't know if Nikon have a slightly different name for it, but what it is, because not all lenses and bodies are made, you know, 100% perfect with accuracy, there's a little bit of variation for each body and for each lens. Sometimes you buy a lens, just say a 50mm f1.4, you buy that, use it on one body, it focuses perfectly, but on another body, it constantly back focuses. So that's due to a miscommunication. You know, the mirror isn't exactly in the right spot in that sense. So with autofocus micro adjust, when you put that lens on, you can adjust it so that mirror always moves to a certain point and sits at that certain point. So that way you won't have that constant back focus. So say it always back focuses by a millimeter or two. Once you adjust it, it'll hit focus every time. So anyone that owns a third party lens, especially a Sigma one, would know all about autofocus micro adjust. And, you know, it's a good feature to have if you have a DSLR. But obviously on mirrorless, because there's no mirror for it to miscommunicate and the lens talks directly to the sensor, that's not an issue. So there are things that can cause, you know, back focus, front focus, like cheap filters, because don't use UV filters, or at least anyway, cheap ones. But with mirrorless, you don't need to do autofocus micro adjust. So that's obviously a massive, massive benefit. That was one of the reasons why I originally wanted to switch to mirrorless, because out of all my lenses, I had like five lenses on a DSLR. I think four of them needed autofocus micro adjust. The only one that didn't, which was funny enough, was the Sigma lens, the 85-14. So if you hate doing autofocus micro adjust, say hello to mirrorless. The second one is, which I was surprised to hear a friend of mine actually still does it, even though he owns a mirrorless camera, is focus recompose. So if you don't know what focus recompose is, so what you would usually do is on a DSLR, the center point was generally the most accurate focus point. It's usually cross type in both vertical and horizontal was most accurate. What people would do is you'd focus using that and then you'd recompose the image. So say, you know, you want your subject in the very outer right of the image. You would focus on them using the center point, then you'd recompose it so they're where you want them to be, then just fire the shutter. The main point of this was because, you know, the outer focus points weren't as accurate, or there might not even be outer focus points in that spot. With mirrorless, because it's using the sensor, the thing, you can, you know, generally most cameras cover up to minimum 80% of the frame, which means wherever you see in the image, you can pretty much focus. So because of that, you don't need to worry about stuff like autofocus micro adjust, focus recompose. You can just simply focus where you want without having to worry about recompose. Also, you know, if you want to move your focus point quickly, you got touch and drag on the rear screen as well, rather than have to worry about a joystick. Because of this, especially with focus recompose, the issue is if you focus and you're using like f1.4, the most shallow depth of field on like a 50, 85, 14, 135, 18, that depth of field is so tiny that when you move to recompose, you can actually change the focus plane. So, you know, at larger depth of fields with wider lenses, it might not matter, but at very shallow depth of fields, that can be the difference between having neon focus on those eyes or something and missing it. The next one might be a bit controversial, but to me, AV and TV, so aperture priority and shutter priority. I personally don't think they're needed as much with a mirrorless camera. I'm always big about shooting in manual, and with mirrorless, you can see what you see what you get. You know, if you're underexposing, you know instantly. If you're overexposing, you know instantly. With DSLRs, you can rely on the meter, but that can be thrown off quite easy. So that's why with, you know, a mirrorless camera, you can see it and you have so much more control. So for example, if you're shooting a portrait, a backlit portrait, and you want to expose for the highlights, but and you don't care if the shadows are a bit dark and you're going to pull them back in post. If you're using AV or TV, it might create a bit more of a hassle because, you know, wherever, depending on what metering mode you have it, say you have spot metering, it's going to expose your subject well, but then it's going to blow out the highlights. Or if you use it to sort of expose for your highlights, blow out the shadows, it's still going to switch to whatever area you're focusing on. And, you know, obviously you have center weighted average, it won't be exactly how you want it, or might try to, you know, get it in the middle, but it's never going to be as accurate as if you set it yourself. And even with something like TV, you know, at the most, what I would recommend is usually learning manual and then just using using manual and just putting the auto ISO on, so that way that it can set the ISO. So you set whatever aperture you want. I'm going to do a video actually on this, on, you know, how to get out of manual. But say, for example, you're shooting portraits of 50mm f1.4. You know that you want, you know, a shallow depth of field, nice bokeh, isolate the subject, and you're using a 50mm lens. So what I would usually do is you set your aperture f1.4, then your shutter speed needs to be a minimum of 1 over 150th. So to, you know, have minimized camera shake and that kind of stuff. So say, you know, if you're in very bright conditions, you know, you can easily use ISO 100, set to ISO 100 and adjust your shutter speed to see what, you know, you need to do. Or if you had an auto ISO, you could just simply set it to 150th of a second, f1.4. If your camera is selecting ISO 100, but you can see the image is still overexposed, you can just start increasing the shutter speed and it'll eventually get to a point, it'll stay at ISO 100, but if you go so high, then it will start to increase the ISO. So you just know there, you can adjust it that way. I feel that's better than using AV and TV. Obviously, if you're learning whatever suits you best and whatever helps you best, but with a mirrorless camera, I honestly think, oh, you just need to learn the basics, what aperture does, what ISO does, what shutter speed does, and then from there, you can use manual. It's not hard because you see exactly what you get. If you just remember 1 over your focal length and what ISO does and what aperture does, then you're set. It's easy. It's very, very easy, but sometimes it seems a lot more daunting and complicated than it can be. Exposure compensation sort of ties into those because, you know, if you're shooting in manual, you don't really need, or you can't really use exposure compensating unless you're in manual with auto ISO, then obviously that's going to do something. But for me, you know, I'm the type, like, it's the same as presets. I feel like I like to control every single one and get the best quality out of every single image. So I never really use that. At the most, I think I would use auto ISO, but I never even touch exposure compensation. Very, very rarely. And the times I have used exposure compensation, it's because I've knocked the dial and I didn't realize it and it's changed the exposure. Wondering why it's constantly, you know, underexposing by like 2 stops so badly. Then I look, oh yeah, exposure compensation dial. That's why I don't mind not having one. The last one that's sort of a big thing that you don't need when you shoot mirrorless is chimping. So if you don't know what chimping is, it's pretty much, you know, after you take a photo, you do that sort of huddled up look where you hold the camera and looking at it like a chimp would look at something, you know. With DSLRs, you know, because there's that guessing game, you had to check to make sure you nailed focus, you got the exposure right, all that kind of stuff. But with mirrorless, when you're taking the photo, you can see it right away if you got it in focus, if you took the shot right. Obviously, you know, later on, you might want to review the images, you know, just look at your work. That's fine, but it's not like after every photo you need to check it. Mirrorless, I don't even set the image review to show up. I just take the photos, take them, blah, blah, blah. And then they're all done pretty much. You don't need to do that chimping. So, you know, there are a lot of benefits to mirrorless. Like I said, you know, this is a summary. All the focus micro adjust is not needed. Focus recompose is not needed because you can focus across the entirety of the sensor most times with a lot better accuracy compared to DSLR as well. My personal opinion, you don't need AV, TV and exposure compensation as much. They still have their place, but, you know, not as relevant unless you're, you know, just learning and also chimping. So that's it for this episode. Hopefully, you know, you don't think I'm completely talking smack. If I do, you know, let me know. Make sure to suggest some topics if you'd like to hear something that you think I could cover as well. In the show notes, there'll be a link where you can suggest a topic. Otherwise, you can follow The Photography Enthusiast at thephotographyenthusiast.com. All links are in the show notes. If you want to follow me and you don't mind hearing about gaming, wrestling, TV shows as well, you can follow me on Twitter at Mr. Meow Puss. That's my WordPress as well, mrmeowpuss.com. That's a personal blog. Otherwise, if you just want to see my photography, my personal photography, photosbydlw.com is generally where you would find it. All my links are posted in the show notes, as well as you can find all my links on Twitter as well. So thank you very much for listening. Make sure to subscribe if you do enjoy this show, and I'll be back very soon with my R6 review. So keep your ear out for it. See ya.